Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the EFL Freezer Crowd podcast. Much like the Carlisle defence, this week I'm joined by a Hayden and Bennett partnership. Andy, how are you?
Yeah, it's good to be back, isn't it, for episode 3. And obviously a nice Carlisle joke there, a niche one to start for our Carlisle listeners.
Yeah. And Luke, how you doing, mate?
Oh, not too bad. How have you been?
Yeah, all right, mate, yeah. Across the EFL this week, we've had a few things to cover. We've had Paul Tisdale being appointed as the new Bristol Rovers manager. MK Dons have somehow got Andrew Sermon in. We've got the reintroduction of the five subs, and Coventry's Matty Godden has got himself some new boots. Welcome back. Well, last week we had another Luke Bennett error made, obviously Derby related. Not sure quite what you were up to.
Oh dear. So taking his club all the way to the Euros.
Wayne first. Rooney's done well in his first week as manager, hasn't he? Straight to the Euros.
Oh dear.
Talking to the Euros and obviously the international break. Now that that's out of the way, much to the joy of many of us EFL fans. We've obviously got a full programme of Championship back this week. So focusing on our three games as we normally do. Who have you gone for this week, Luke?
All that Championship, and I've gone for a League Two game.
Of course.
I've gone for the performance of the day in League Two. I've gone for Crawley at home to Carlisle. Crawley on a 15-game unbeaten run, stretching nearly back a year. Carlisle come to town and just wipe the floor with them. I can't not.
You can't not. As you mentioned before, obviously with that Bennett-Hayden combination, always works.
Always works.
It works sometimes. On the football pitch, maybe. In the podcast sphere. Maybe not.
Yeah, they weren't the most inspiring goals, so there's got to be a reason you've picked this game.
Yeah, a few reasons I've picked. Obviously, the Hayden-Bennett combination at centre-back. Their first game playing together at this season, at least. And they look like they've been playing together for years. Gimi Touré, a big talent in League Two, is back after serving his suspension for what I can only describe as a rhinoceros-style charge of a headbutt against Exeter's captain Jake Taylor a couple of weeks ago. Just gets up after being stamped on, head down, and charges about a yard into Jake Taylor. Most obvious red card you'll ever see. If we do a red card of the season, that's a big contender.
And we will.
We will.
I mean, if I've been stamped on, I'd like to think that's a good reaction. Perhaps not if you're a Carlisle fan.
Yeah, a good reaction, not a professional one.
As a neutral, fantastic.
Yeah, as someone who makes a podcast about the EFL, brilliant reaction.
Great content. Well, I watched that game and it was a game of absolute pee rollers. It was like watching back one of your under eights games where no one's got the leg strength to kick it off the ground. Right, the first goal of the game came from a Gimi Touré shot that's just parried out to Reece Bennett, who just bundles it into the back post, Matt Smith style. And all the goals were a little bit boring, to be honest, but I've focused on it because Carlisle just dominated every 50-50. They just won it. All the goals came from just getting to the ball first.
Yeah, I think obviously they'll be happy with that. I mean, you've talked about the form that obviously Crawley were on, and to go there and do that and get the win is incredible. Crawley obviously be a little bit disappointed because, to be honest, avoidable goals, don't really need to be conceding them. Just get a foot in first and you've got yourself at least a point there.
Yeah, Crawley won't be too disappointed because that's probably Carlisle's best performance of the season. They're unbeaten in 15 games at home, stretching back nearly a year. They've scored in every one of those games. You know, you're due a bad performance every now and again.
Yeah, and looking at the stats as well, I'm surprised you haven't said. As far as I can tell, that's at least 10 games in a row now that Carlisle are unbeaten against Crawley.
I should know that. I feel embarrassed.
It could be more, but I've scrolled back to 5 years ago and they're undefeated.
Oh, dear.
Sometimes you just don't want them omens, do you? You're on a 15-game unbeaten run that stretches back nearly a year at home, and then your bogey team turns up and does that to you.
Can't be helped. The second one comes from Joshua Coyote's goal, who just follows up from having a good week. He scored for Republic of Ireland's under-21s just a few days ago. And then their third goal was A. Hayden just pouncing on another parry from the goalkeeper. Another very average goal, but...
That's what we do, isn't it? That's A. Hayden's. But, you know, who was the better player out of Hayden and Bennett that week, Luke?
Well, only one of them got into the EFL Team of the Week.
Hmm. So you've upstaged me. For the first time.
I was going to say not for the first time. Oh, God damn it. Lost out there.
Much like Crawley Town did as well. Yeah. So, and obviously, red card with 10 minutes to go as well. Pretty pointless.
Yeah, Carlisle just threw for a fourth and he just goes in and takes him down. He just accepts it. Just walks off and accepts it.
I think it's one of those, like, if the scoreline isn't already what it is, then you probably understand why he's making the tackle, because he's clean through, probably going to score. He's probably been sucked in and dived into it a little bit. But when the scoreline's already what it is, why are you diving in like that? But like you say, despite a little bit of screaming, he's taking it well himself. He's obviously just walked off knowing exactly what he's done.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I think what's a great thing about, not there's many great things about being no fans there, the things you can hear from the touchline as well, superb. The amount of people screaming, he's got the ball for that tackle. He just hasn't. It's a definite straight red. He knows it is.
He's walking off before the reds come out. He knows
The fact that it's being screamed says it's probably like the centre forward who's about 50 yards away who's seen it going, no, ref, he's got the ball. But, you know, you just take one look at the player himself. His shirt looks like he might already be taking it off before he's left the pitch. He already knows what he's done. He's walking.
You expect that from a fan or something, but from, you know, the goalkeeping coach or somebody screaming on the touchline, he's got the ball. 3-0 down with 10 minutes to go.
Well, Carlisle are one of the informed teams in the division. They'll really be looking for promotion at the moment, and Crawley shouldn't mind too much. Their home form's got them sat comfortably in the middle of the table at the moment, and with a Hayden and Bennett partnership, you know, it's pretty special. Anything's possible.
Agreed.
Not sure I'm going to agree with that one.
That'll fucking do me. Come on, let's go.
Well, talking of that'll do me, I kind of focused on the Crewe Portsmouth game this week. And if anything screams that'll do me, it's 31% possession and scoring four goals, which obviously Pompey have done this weekend. It's a bit harsh, really, on the face of it. 4-1 says that you've kind of turned up and battered somebody. But as I said, with a very 31% possession, Crewe obviously kind of controlled a lot of the game. And I think it's just one of those things that's going to happen when you're being a bit braver. And kind of the way they play is to knock it around, try and keep the ball. And that starts really with your defence. And they've made probably two or three mistakes and all of them have led to goals. Some weeks it's going to work for them. They're going to play through the lines and win games comfortably. And other weeks they're going to have a bad day at the office where it doesn't quite work.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think it depends on who you're playing against, though, surely. When you've got coming up against a team like Portsmouth and King Kenny Jackett's Portsmouth as well at that rate, he's happy not to have the ball. He'll be happy for Crewe to keep the ball and make their mistakes all game. So it's sort of 30% possession for Portsmouth, but who cares?
Yeah, I think it's a really difficult one because, like you say, Kenny's going to turn up and be very happy with that. He's going to be more than happy for his team to sit, kind of make the most of whatever possession they do get, but not be too fussed about controlling the game. But when you're Crewe and you've worked on a system now and it's worked obviously last season and got them where they are now, I think it's a bit of a theme for teams who've been working on this. They kind of work so hard on taking control of possession, knocking it around quite nicely to control a game, that actually a plan B isn't necessarily there or ready for them to use. And they kind of stick to the formula. And like you say, against teams like Portsmouth, maybe they just needed to do something a little bit different, especially as clearly even the first goal is a mistake. Maybe at that point you need to identify from a managerial point of view that perhaps we've got it a little bit wrong. We need to do something a bit different. It just might be that they haven't got that option to do it.
Yeah, I think when you're coming up against the likes of Ronan Curtis and John Marquis as well, they're going to punish you. It's not like playing against some of the lesser teams in the division where you can get away with making these little mistakes at the back. But obviously, I think Danny Crowley, he's obviously been everywhere at the moment, hasn't he, talking about football. He had a good little quote saying, possession can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing with the ball. And I think that pretty much summed up Crewe at the back today.
Yeah, it kind of summed up the opposite of what Portsmouth were, because they were just, as they moved the ball really quickly, they just took their chances. And I suppose that's what Kenny Jackett just wants of them. He's not too bothered about possession. He's worried about what they do with it.
Yeah, I think like it's easy to get hung up on that. I mean, I totally agree. Crowley has been everywhere this weekend, but also talked a hell of a lot of sense. But it's a difficult one. As a Crewe fan, you're not going to stand there and slag off what you've been doing for the last year and a half, because it's worked for them and it does work. And last week I covered them against Peterborough and they've blown them away, a team that were at that time were top of the league. So it does work for them. It's just that, like you say, maybe against some oppositions, do something a little bit different, or just perhaps sweep this one under the carpet and go, do you know what? Bad day at the office. It hasn't quite worked for us. Our opposition are scoring goals where they've hit the post and it's come back and landed straight to his head to nod in. When you're in form like John Marquis is, then you can't afford to be giving them mistakes. Even the first goal, Curtis has scuffed it. And it's kind of like, talking of P-rollers as Luke did earlier, it's literally rolled into the net. And, you know, take nothing away from it. It's hit the back of the net. It's a goal. They all count. But some weeks you just have to go, yeah, it hasn't worked. Let's get back to a training ground and put that one behind us.
Wouldn't surprise me if that John Marquis one was on purpose with the form he's been on at the moment. 1-2 with the woodwork.
No, I was gonna get to that. It was pretty reminiscent of a goal he actually scored for Millwall once as well, against Aston Villa in the Cup.
Of course it was.
He's put it back round to Millwall already.
He's hit one against the bar and then he's just nodded it in afterwards. You know, it's rare that you do that twice in your career.
Perhaps he means it. Is that what you're suggesting?
I'm not suggesting anything like that, but if there's one person who could do it,
it's Big Super John. John.
But yeah, I do agree with your point before. Like, it was just a bad day at the office for Crewe. I think there was at least two of the goals. I'm pretty sure the goalkeeper was at fault for them. He wasn't convincing at all today. Ronan Curtis, big season for him, isn't it? I think he could be on one this year. He's got a goal every three games now, and he definitely took one of those goals really well, where he was sort of fouled for and the ref played advantage.
He's done really well, to be honest. Don't normally do this, but fair play to the ref for playing advantage there. They have, though. He's taken it really well. And, you know, I said the first goal's a scuffer. He's still got into position. He's still done his job and put it in the net. I think potentially this is the season that we see those players step up for Portsmouth. As we said, obviously, John Marquis has stepped up and he started scoring again. Curtis scoring one in every three, which is a great sign for him. And then you've also got Marcus Harness, who's been banging them in. I think he got player of the month this, or maybe he got the goal of the month this month. I mean, he's been on fire as well. So if they can keep that up, they won't be too bothered about possession. And I think, as their form suggests, they're averaging over 2 points a game at the moment. So they do look like they've got enough to put a promotion charge on.
Yeah, I fully agree. And if Ellis Harrison can start scoring as well, I mean, they've definitely got goals in that team. And like you said, Harness looks like the player in the division at the moment. So
yeah.
Naylor's is lovely. He turns his man and just smashes it. It's a really good goal.
Yeah, again, I think defensively Crewe will be a little bit disappointed at that. He rides the challenge so easily, but then, yeah, lovely finish from him. I think it's a weird one for me, Portsmouth, because you look at it kind of from the outside as someone who, you know, I'm not a Portsmouth fan, but as I say, from the outside, scoring goals, picking up points, averaging over 2 points a game, which any normal season would be enough to see you right up there come the end of the year. But there's still quite a few complaints coming from the kind of Portsmouth fans at the moment. It seems to be a bit of a common theme. Some of those teams that have been stuck down there for a little while, maybe your Sunderlands and your Portsmouths, the fans are getting maybe a little bit impatient. I'm wanting to see a little bit more. They seem to be complaining quite a lot about Jackett's style of play, which I guess it's easy for me to say, well, why are they complaining when they're picking up 3 points? But why are they complaining when they're picking up 3 points?
Yeah, I think I think when it comes to that, there's a lot of big teams that have been stuck down there for a while now, and they're sort of thinking, if we're going to play in this sort of way, we need to make sure we are getting promoted. Obviously, you know, you guys know that I'm a big Kenny Jackett supporter as a Millwall fan. Superb job for us. So I think he's the sort of guy who's going to be able to get them out of the division. Hopefully this is the year he can do that. I think there are a lot of teams in that division now that you see teams like Peterborough and Hull playing it around a little bit nicer, and Ipswich and Portsmouth and Sunderland fans are thinking, why can't we do that?
Yeah, I think it's that classic thing, isn't it? You'll take it when you're winning, but the second that you start losing, that sort of 30% possession and not necessarily playing it nicely gets a little bit frustrating for fans. I think, I don't know, people can feel free to correct me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like last year they were really harshly done by the way that the season ended. They were on serious form. Obviously, it all kind of petered out for them in the end after the season closed and it went to the points per game. But I do feel like they would have had a real chance. And I'm not, you know, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say I think they would have had a chance at top two if the season had been played out the way it was. And now that's not me saying that any of the teams you got promoted shouldn't have been. You don't know what would happen.
No, why would you say that, James?
Yeah. No comment. But you can see what I'm saying, though. I think if maybe they'd gone up last year, it would have given him a bit of breathing room. I don't know. They're just getting a little bit frustrated, like you say, some of those big teams.
Yeah, it's definitely now or never for them, isn't it? For Kenny as well, I think. I said that as if I know him, and I will call you Kenny. For Kenny Jackett. But I think I'm pretty confident they will perform this season. So hopefully he keeps it up for everyone's sake.
Yeah, it's not something that we all want. No one wants to see Portsmouth down there for much longer. Big club, really, to be down there.
Nah, that's... No Southampton fans are listening to this, are they?
We don't talk about that league.
Yeah.
Probably worth mentioning that Crewe obviously did get one back from the penalty at the end, but wasn't enough, and a bad day at the office for them overall. Great day at the office for Pompey.
Calm as you like penalty, wasn't it? As if there was no pressure on him.
Yeah, that's just one free one for the goals tally, I think.
It looks like they've been struggling a little bit since, obviously, they've lost the other day against Coventry.
Oh, yeah. And that'll play havoc with anyone's morale, that one. So.
Good laughs there, gents. But that was obviously talking about Reading's loss to Coventry a couple of weeks ago now. So I thought I'd focus on Reading this week as well. And once again, they've thrown away a 2-goal lead to Bournemouth, which... On the face of it, people may look at it and think that Bournemouth were the dominant side here throughout the game. I don't really think that was the case. I think Reading were sort of good value for going 1-0 up in the game as well. Run from Semedo, which was absolutely incredible for the first goal, which came out of nowhere, beating a couple of men and then sort of head-butted a little bit by Begovic on the leg, and he's gone down, which was put away well by Lucas Yao. And then same again, really, for the second. People say Bournemouth were on top, which they probably were a little bit. It just took a couple of moments of quality from a few Reading youngsters. Ajaria as well played an absolutely incredible ball through to Aluko. He's someone, Ajaria, feels like he's been around for a while now. I don't know about you guys, but he's still only 22 after playing for Sunderland and then a season at Rangers as well.
God, is he really still that young? Yeah, no, it was a lovely through ball. Like you say, the goals sort of felt like they came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it wasn't like I said, I don't think it was the backs against the wall performance where Bournemouth sort of dominated and Reading came out of nowhere, although it has sort of been suggested that. But then once it went 2-0, obviously the second half was more of a dominant performance from Bournemouth. It's just great to see someone like David Brooks unlocking defences again. He looks like a really good prospect. And also, I know Arnaut Danjuma. That's how you say his name as well. I'll admit, I haven't actually heard that much about him. He's one that the commentators like to say his name quite a bit. He's also got two Netherlands caps as well. And he scored a goal against Belgium. Yeah.
He took his
goal really well as well.
Yeah, there was people around him screaming for him to lay that off to them. And you're thinking, oh yeah, he's going to pull it back. And then he just takes it so well. To be fair to him, he's looking like the sort of player who can sort of grab a game and change it at the moment. He looks a really good player. And like you say, it is great to see Brooks back kind of terrorising a few defence. I'm not sure about the holes in the back of his socks, though. I don't know if you saw that. Two massive holes cut into the back of his socks, David Brooks. Now, I'm not suggesting it's ridiculous, because someone will probably tell me that it's due to some sort of, I don't know, muscle problem or something.
No, yeah, we don't care about that. Yeah. So obviously Solanke made it 2-1, and then Danjuma levelled it up as well. A contender for goal of the week. I know we've got a lot this week. We'll get onto it later. But Lewis Cook to put them 3-2 ahead. Absolutely incredible strike. Just dipped out of nowhere.
Wonderful.
I think he's obviously someone who left Leeds for Premier League Bournemouth a couple of years ago. Maybe regretting that decision now. Has he learned that up at Elland Road, Luke?
Well, when he was at Elland Road, he got EFL Player of the
Year. Whoa.
Year.
Did we just reveal Luke's team? Because we've not done that yet.
I don't think you've done that yet. Well, we're not talking Premier League, are we?
No, I just said, has he learned that at Elland Road? That's all I said. Has he learned that at Elland Road?
Luke. you've offered Luke in. But,
and the answer was no.
It is a great hit. It's one of those moments as well where he scored a screamer, and then he knows he scored a screamer. So instead of celebrating it, he just turns around and walks off as if it's something he does in his sleep, which always makes me smile a little bit. But like you say, it's been a lot of good goals across the EFL this weekend. But that's definitely up there with one of the best. The amount of dip he's got on that is ridiculous.
I think it's his first goal of the season, I think, as well. And it was one of those ones where it looks like he does it every week. But it was, although Bournemouth went on to win the game, obviously, it was just like, so good watching Reading play football. Like Michael Olise came off the bench, just 18 years old. He's going to be snapped up by a Premier League team.
What a talent.
As soon as possible, I guess. And Rinomota as well. He's got a really good backstory that I'm sure some people will be aware of, where he was playing for AFC Portchester a couple of years ago. Why are you telling me? Which is near Portsmouth somewhere, another Portsmouth mention. And he was only called up into their first team when they had an injury crisis. Their manager at the time, Graham Ricks, from England and Arsenal fame, gave Reading a call to watch him. He got a trial there, and the rest is history. So he looks like a really good talent with a Jamie Vardy-style backstory, slightly younger. So hopefully he'll be able to carry on. But then Bournemouth, really just, they obviously got a little bit more talent on the pitch and a little bit more experience, and went on to win it fairly comfortably in the end with Solanke grabbing another goal. So I think, like we've said before, Bournemouth look like they're going to probably end up at least in the top six, hopefully be getting the top two, those Premier League teams that were relegated are looking really strong at the moment.
I think something that's worth mentioning is the fact that actually before that, Dominic Solanke kind of, to kind of really seal it, which by the way is ridiculous goalkeeping, it's worth mentioning that Reading did have one saved off the line, which I think they used the goal line technology for. It's a hell of a save. And to be honest, for 5-10 minutes, Reading looked like the team that would get back into it. And then, I don't know, maybe that save kind of takes the wind out of their sails a little bit. And if that didn't, then certainly the ridiculous goalkeeper at the other end did. and so that takes that goal really well. But yeah, like you say, it was really nice to see Reading have a little bit, have a go kind of, because we've talked a lot. And again, they talked a lot, you know, Danny Cowley said this as well over the weekend. I know we've already mentioned him, how efficient Reading have been in front of goal in terms of, you know, they've not taken too many shots and most of them have found the back of the net. It was nice to see them actually play a little bit of football and go for it. And I did feel for them a little bit, because you go 2-0 up, obviously not on a great run at the moment. But I think, like you say, the quality from Bournemouth just ends up showing through, and they've taken control of the game. And I think they'll do that against quite a lot of sides this year. The squad size and the quality they've got coming off the bench, I think they're probably going to be right up there this season.
Yeah, especially at home as well in that background. It's also good to see from Reading the sort of players they're bringing off the bench. Elise is coming on, Yaku Mato, but then they've always got room to bring on another sort of EFL player. You know, Sam Baldock, still only 31.
Only.
He's coming on, not much of an impact, but always good to see him on the pitch.
Yeah, they bought Aluko on last week, and he was one of the best players on the pitch when he came on, and it was quite surprising to find out it was his first goal in about 18 months the other day.
Oh, yes, because obviously he, just like our podcasting friend here, Luke Bennett, came back from Beijing a lot stronger.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I think though that is not a bad thing to have, is it? It's a good blend. They've got that kind of youth coming through. I can see you both laughing here, and me trying to be serious, but I will be serious. They've obviously got a nice.
Should we just say that Luke Bennett did spend a year in Beijing, and now he's back in the country? So, and so did Sonny Luca. So there's the joke.
I think it is a quite a good blend that they've struck between some of that experience that they can bring off the bench or start if they need to in Aluko's case. And also then some of that young talent coming through, like you say, definitely got some players to watch. It's going to be a fight to keep hold of them, especially if their form doesn't pick up, surely.
Yeah, I think so. I think whether during these COVID times, whether they'll have the money to be able to hang on to them, I don't know. But hopefully they'll be able to last until at least the end of the season and invest that again. They've obviously got some good experience in amongst it as well. With, well, Aluko for one, Morrison at the back, John Raphael. Swift. John Swift didn't, I don't think he, is he
didn't,
injured
he didn't
at the
play,
moment?
But he, yeah, he's coming back soon. I thought he'd be back in time for this game, but.
I don't want to annoy any Reading fans here who may be listening, but I've heard rumours that Raphael is the best goalkeeper in the Championship. And if he plays like that every week, I can't agree.
Just what is he doing? Like, he makes the mistake, he has the chance to then boot it, he doesn't, he falls over it, he then sort of like turtles over the top of it, then he rolls around it, and in the end he just allows, like, I really don't know what he's doing, but it's killed any chance they had of getting back into the game. I mean, to be fair to him, he also did make a couple of good saves, and he is a good goalkeeper. That is not one of his finest moments. So,
he made a big mistake against Stoke, just playing a really poor ball out the other week.
And does he play for Derby now? Does he?
That's one for the regular listeners.
And we've got a Millwall fan amongst our ranks, and you've got to expect Barts to be among the one of the best goalkeepers in the league this year.
Yeah, we may touch on that later on when we talk about Millwall hanging on to a point against Cardiff City. But I think to sum up, Begovic, early mistake for them, but then made some great saves for Bournemouth down the other end. And they were obviously good value to the win in the end, although it probably wasn't as one-sided as people said.
Bristol Rovers won away at Walsall as well, which I think they're on actually a decent bit of form at the moment, Rovers. Their manager needs to kind of prove himself.
Well, I know we laughed at that last week because he obviously followed that up by getting sacked. And we're going to start our EFL roundup this week with looking at how the new managers got on. Starting at Tisdale at Rovers. Obviously, not a great start for him, having lost 1-0. I think he's probably going to have kind of a bit more time than I think he even said. He only had 24 hours at the club before that game, so couldn't really expect too much of a reaction, but not the best of starts for him. Another manager who didn't get off to the start that he would have liked is Tony Pulis, obviously losing 1-0 following an early red card. And then Wayne Rooney as well and his management team not getting off to the greatest start away at Bristol City, losing 1-0 there.
On the subject of Pulis, even after the red card, they only conceded one shot on target. It's like Pulis has gone in and showed a montage of Ryan Shawcross defending. So they've done quite well, the 10 men.
He definitely showed a Ryan Shawcross type tackle to Josh Windass, at least.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things actually about that game. There was a lot of talk about veteran goalkeeper and ex-Coventry goalkeeper, Kieran Westwood, being put back in as the starting goalkeeper. Weird decision, really, on the face of the fact that he's not played for them for a long time. But I guess a little bit of experience is something he was going for, and he's putting back in goal. But then he does a very questionable punch, which doesn't get out of the box and leads to the winning goal in the end, which will disappoint both Pulis and the keeper. But you can understand why he's done it. But yeah, overall, not the start that Pulis would have wanted. I think, to be honest, Rooney's start, they've just come up against a team who are on form at the moment. Bristol City doing well at the moment. I think obviously picking up wins either side of the international break will please them, considering the fact that over the break they had a huge outbreak of COVID. And I think the manager, Dean Holden, said he only had a day and a half of training leading up to the game. So to go and get a win, especially scoring late on as they did, he actually said in his post-match interview, he didn't know what he was going to get out of his team after the 60-minute mark, because obviously fitness levels were kind of unknown after the COVID stuff. But they've now scored, I think it's 7 goals in the last 15 minutes this season. So Bristol City looking quite good at the moment.
Yeah, I know you delved into that game a little bit more, James. Do you think the pressure of management got to Wayne Rooney on the pitch a little bit as well?
Well, it's funny you say that. There was some quite funny shots from the cameraman of Rossini passing out a slip to Rooney and then him proceeding to try and figure out what was actually on the slip.
It just said
he
shoot.
Looks at it. Well, so, yeah.
It's a shout at every other player on the pitch.
It was funny. It was funny to watch it, really, because he's picked up the note, and I was hoping it was just him being told to sub himself off or something. But obviously, he's looked at the note and tried to figure it out, had a little look around. It's a harsh one, isn't it? You know, to expect him to get a win and turn things around straight away is hard. The management team, I don't know, it worked for quite a while. They changed the formation up a little bit, and they did actually look quite good for periods, but I don't know. It was a bit of a nothing game. Two teams kind of going for a bit of a transition with obviously Rooney coming back to, well, not coming back, starting his management, and Bristol City having to fight this COVID outbreak. It was a tough one, really, but they've nicked it at the end.
Yeah, it was a bit of an odd game with both teams having a lot going on, and Derby swapped to 4-2-3-1 did work. They did play better, but they come up against too good an opposition in Bristol City at the moment, so it was quite of a hard one to turn things around in one game.
Yeah, I think Rooney's definitely going to be looking at their fixture list. I don't know if you've seen, they've got some great games coming up for us to look at. Away at Neil Warnock, it's Middlesbrough up next, the Rooney-Warnock derby. After that, they've got home to Wickham, if he doesn't win that one, pressure on already. Then they've got home to Coventry and away at Millwall. So they've got two really tough ones after that. So
really difficult. No points there.
I'd be very surprised if Rooney and co are still in 5 games' time.
Yeah, also the fact that there's all this Rafa Benitez chat at the moment talking about him coming in. I'm not being funny. If you're the new owner and you're kind of in front of you on the table is Wayne Rooney and Liam Rossini, or Rafa Benitez, I know who I'm picking. And that's no disrespect to the other two, but, you know, the experience might be what they need right now since they're down the bottom. I'm just hoping they don't bring Benitez in before they play Coventry.
But it's funny that according to the bookies, the top two now are Benitez and Sam Allardyce. pint of wine, Sam Allardyce. I'm a box office, so we'll take them. And John Terry, of course.
The merry-go-round works its magic again. We also need to touch on the fact that Tranmere have gone through a little bit of a transition at the moment.
From this evening, I must give the British people a very simple instruction. You must stay
indoors.
Brilliant. Yeah, indoors. Interesting one, really. He's had 2 games in charge at Tranmere and they've scored 9 goals. Obviously won both of those games, but immediately after winning the game on Saturday, they've then announced Keith Hill as the new manager, which it's safe to say the fans didn't take to that well on Twitter.
Yeah, it's really bizarre that they wouldn't give him a little bit more time as well, I think. What is it, 9 goals they've scored in 2 games with Ian Dawes in charge as well. And if there's someone who's, you know, going to be passed around a couple of teams in the Football League at the moment, it's probably Keith Hill.
Yeah, it just feels a little harsh. I don't know. I guess we don't know the ins and outs. And Dawes might not have wanted to take the management role. And I think he stayed on there as assistant. So he's still got a role at the club, which I think will work well for them because obviously he knows the players and he's been effective over the last 2 weeks. But yeah, it just feels harsh not to have given him a go and also to announce it so soon after they've just wiped the floor with Grimsby.
Ian Holloway's Grimsby.
Ian Holloway. Yeah. He's What can you say about Ian Holloway, really?
Yeah, we could do a whole episode, ten episodes.
But I think what's interesting is, you know, a lot of people like hearing him speak, and he comes out with a few one-liners that everyone, you know, you can get behind. He did that rant in the middle of the week about the people at the top of the EFL not running it well enough. And actually, I think a few people will get behind that. But then he's had a bit of an odd rant after this week. I think maybe he's feeling the pressure. They've conceded 14 goals in 4 games, which is not something to be proud of for Holloway. And he goes on a bit of a mad rant. He sort of directs his rant almost straight to the fans and says, "If you want me to go, I'll go." As well as saying that he's midway
through... Don't give him that option.
Well, exactly, yeah. But I don't know, offering up saying, you know, he said, "Oh, I'm an honest guy, I'll always be honest, if you want me to go, I'll walk now." Andy's probably got something to say about that.
probably not great for the podcast, but I'm speechless.
Yeah, he also says about how he's currently selling his house to buy one in Grimsby. I'm not really sure what the point of that is. Surely the fans aren't too bothered. They just want results, mate. and he's then also said, which I thought was really harsh, rather than sort of, I guess he does take the blame a little bit, but he says, "Oh, I'm going to take the blame and it's my fault." And then throws his own scout under the bus by saying, "My scout told me that they play in a certain way and they didn't play that way." What about
winning yourself?
What about going and winning the game rather than worrying so much about them? I don't know. It just felt a little bit harsh. He said he recognised the fact that he didn't have enough experience in his team, but then said, "Actually, I bought these players in." So again, contradicted himself a little bit, but he did say that he would absolutely love to have a Vaughan or a Hansen up front, which obviously Tranmere have got. Which I guess you can understand. Grimsby's budget won't be the same as Tranmere's this year, but still, 14 goals in 4 games doesn't reflect well on you, Ian, there, I'm afraid.
No, I don't think we're going to have much sympathy for him on this podcast anyway. There'll be a lot of people using him for cheap content that I'm sure we probably will at some point. But I think we're firmly falling on the other side of that crowd at the moment.
Talking to people who've lingered around the EFL for quite a while, there's a little shout out I want to make for Kevin Ellison, who's come on for Newport County this week at the ripe old age of 41. And he's nicked it with a 96th minute winner. Like a fine wine, Kevin Ellison.
Quite a while is an understatement. But bless him, he's still got it.
He doesn't want your blessing, mate. He's scoring goals.
Yeah, when you're playing for a team in 1999 and then you're still playing for in 2020.
No, good on him, to be fair. You can't knock that, can you? Fair play to him. And I know we were just talking on the subject of managers, but it's probably worth mentioning that Burton's manager, Buxton, is running on borrowed time a little bit. Obviously, a club affected by COVID, not only on the pitch, having to kind of not play their full-strength team over the last couple of weeks, but also off the pitch with their experienced manager, Clough, having to step down during the first kind of wave of COVID due to money reasons and to help the club out. But yeah, Buxton's he's looking maybe a little bit out of his depth, and it's quite harsh in your first management role, having to deal with what Burton are going through at the moment. But they do look like they're struggling, and obviously lost again at the weekend. Yeah, obviously something else across the EFL, which I know you mentioned earlier, but something that really is making me laugh is some of the stuff that the iFollow cameras are picking up at the moment in the mics. We had the interesting matchup of Steve Evans and Lee Bowyer on the sideline at the weekend. And Charlton actually got a penalty. And then Omar Bogle and Watt start to argue over who gets to take it and having a bit of a kind of fight over the ball. The next thing you hear is Lee Bowyer's voice screaming, and I will tame this down a little bit, but Lee Bowyer starts screaming, "Omar, give him the ball. Just give him the ball." Bogle then looks across, realises he probably needs to pass the ball over, gives it to Washington, who steps up and misses it. Brilliant. also in that game, you could hear, obviously, because it's Steve Evans, you could hear Steve Evans barking his orders at his team, and giving the ref quite a lot of stick. And the commentary, and it was the Charlton commentary I was listening to, goes, apologies if any listeners can hear a high-pitched noise there. That is Steve Evans, which did have me laughing, to be honest. But yeah, some great stuff being picked up due to the lack of fans at the moment.
I believe that they took it a little bit too far at one point, didn't they, with Steve Evans, James?
Yeah, there was talk of shutting him up using a crate of pies at half time, but we won't talk about it.
Yeah. They said what they said, and we don't need to repeat it. Although we have.
We have a bit.
Yeah, and also on that, it's also good the stuff that's not just picked up by the managers and the players, but also the reporters sort of sat next to the one you're listening to. So I think at the Stoke Huddersfield game, we actually haven't mentioned that much considering it was a 7-goal thriller. Yeah, Tyrese Campbell's second goal, just it was the classics Huddersfield trying to play out from the back, a little bit like we touched on with Crewe earlier, just messing around with it at the back and it not going well at all. And then you can just hear, I assume he's a Huddersfield reporter because it is in a sort of strong Yorkshire accent, and we will listen to it.
This is just ridiculous.
And what happens 2 seconds after he says that? Campbell smashes it into the bottom corner after some more dilly-dallying at the back from Huddersfield. So more of that, please.
And to finish up the EFL roundup, it'd be remiss if we were not to mention Millwall and Coventry this week, obviously being our teams. I can only apologise to anyone who sat through the 90 minutes of football on Friday night for Coventry. I don't know if it was a point gained or two lost for either team. It was a bore fest. All I'll say is there was a fantastic save from Marco Morosi, which weirdly the commentators decided to add a H into his surname. They actually messed up quite a few surnames on Friday, which me blabbering on about mispronunciations just shows you how interesting this game really was.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like our podcast as well. Mispronunciations. People go back to week one with that Barnsley forward.
In all fairness, I'm just really disappointed we didn't get to see Matty Godden on the pitch. I mentioned his new boots at the start. He was quite kindly bought a pair of boots from a fan this week. I'll let you make your mind upon them if you go on his Twitter.
Yeah, we'll post that onto our socials. Yeah, Three's a Crowd Pod on Twitter. But yeah, well, not the best. Probably for the best that he didn't get on the pitch this week, actually, because...
Well, I'm not passing judgment. On to your game.
Yeah, so this is the first time in a long time that I haven't actually forked out a tenner to watch it on the brilliant iFollow. And I think I might be regretting it, actually, because it sounds like a game that had a few more chances than most of our games have this season. Even after going 1-0 up, and I'm sure we'll get onto that after a Matt Smith header. Surprise. We sort of didn't really sit back and went for a few more goals, missed a few chances. Kiefer Moore comes on for them, 10 minutes to go. A little bit of sloppy defending, and really rare from Cooper and Hutchinson to be beaten so easily by Moore when he's running through.
Well, Josh Murphy's pass is sublime. Just cuts it the defence.
But you'd expect one of them to come in front and win the ball or at least dive in. It was a little bit too easy for Moore. And then after that, with both teams have gone for it, which is really surprising. From obviously, we haven't even mentioned yet the Neil Harris return to the Den. But if he was in charge of us, I think we would have been sitting back and taking a draw. But Rowett's gone for it. He's gone for it. Ben Thompson's missed an absolute sitter of a header. And then... Super John Daddy Bodvarsson, fresh from his appearance starting at Wembley for Iceland, has gone through one-on-one with the keeper and hit it a couple of yards wide.
A couple of yards?
Well, I don't know. There's only so much you can take at the moment from him. If he's playing for a team in the Championship up front, you've got to expect him to hit the target there. But I think a point both teams would have probably taken at the start of the game.
Well, they'd drawn the last five in a row. This made it six. So I think both teams were just desperate not to draw another one.
Yeah, I've been to Cardiff away, I think the last two times we've played, and I'm pretty sure they've both been 0-0.
Yeah.
So whether I'll go next time we're allowed, I don't know.
I think one thing I will mention, though, to be fair, I know obviously the through ball was great from Murphy to Moore, but you've got a little bit unlucky. Like the tackle's come in and Moore's trying to put it across the goalkeeper. But then the actual tackles ended up putting it at the near post, which I think was wrong-footed the keeper a little bit, who, by the way, barred another wonderful gaming goal. He made some really, really good saves. But yeah, it was just one of those things, like you say, normally you'd expect them to tidy it up. And then when they do get a tackle in, it ends up going off the defender's foot. I think, is it Cooper's foot? I couldn't tell. And it ends up going in at the near post. It is a little bit harsh, but I think 1-1 probably the fair result. Both had other chances in the game.
Yeah, I think obviously we're focused on Millwall there, obviously, but it takes a lot to beat Bart at the moment. And they've done that, maybe a little bit lucky for that one, but they did have their chances as well, to be fair to them. So I think, like you said, draw, fair result, and we move on.
Probably should have mentioned the fact that obviously the reason that they put Coventry, Birmingham, and I will say Coventry versus Birmingham, Coventry being the home team, on Sky on Friday night is because, as every man and his grand seems to be billing it at the moment, it was the tenants versus landlord derby day. but yeah, I don't really want to talk about that too much, to be honest. It's not a situation that any fan wants to be in. Cheers, Birmingham and all that. But we'll move on from it swiftly and get 3 points Wednesday, please.
And I will try to fix you.
Well, boys, we've had another email in this week from a fan, and it's come from a Martin Ravens. So thank you, Martin. And it says this: "Hi, guys. Enjoyed the pod so far. Last week's email was a great question, but it had me thinking about the other end of the Championship table. With a few unexpected sides down there at the bottom, like Derby, Forest, and plus Sheffield Wednesday's new manager, Pulis, likely to change their fortunes a little, who do you expect to be down there and potentially relegated from the Championship come the end of this season? The obvious shout seems to be Wickham, but they seem to have picked up a little bit. I do think the other promoted sides, Rotherham and Coventry, will do well to stay up this season. Would you agree?" And then it says, "Thanks. Keep up the good work. Martin Ravens."
Oh, thank you, Martin. Let's start off with that. Some glowing praise for us there. And the thing is, I know we had a question last week from I believe it was Zampa the Lion. And we ended up agreeing with them. But if there's one thing we don't want to do on this podcast, it is agree with everyone.
especially not each other.
Exactly. And I know that some of us may think Coventry City are going to struggle this season. Some of us maybe think that even more. But he says that teams that are struggling down there, like Derby, Wednesday, Forest, I think it's going to take a little bit more for those teams to actually get out of there this season. You know, that we say there may not be a surprise package at the top of the division this year, with teams getting relegated, being favourites to go up. But I think we may get a surprise at the bottom. Yes, Wickham, Coventry and Rotherham are probably still the three favourites to go down, even after 12 games. But I don't think you can really suggest that Derby and, well, obviously not Derby, but even Sheffield Wednesday have done enough to get themselves far away.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with that. I think we reflected last week, like you say, on the no surprise package at the top of the division. And I think it was you, Andy, who actually said that not having the fans there might have something to do with that. I think that's going to play into it at the bottom this year. If you look at those teams you just mentioned, Derby seem to have a fairly good following week in, week out. Forest certainly do. And Sheffield Wednesday, obviously being quite a big club, they're probably missing their fans quite a lot at the moment. And I actually agree with you. I think one of those might just get sucked into it a little bit. The longer that this Derby fiasco goes on for with the change of ownership and not actually deciding who the manager is going to be, I can only see that being negative for them. And actually, they probably need to get that sorted out as soon as possible. Otherwise, they could see themselves down there at the bottom. And I would agree with what you've said about Sheffield Wednesday as well. I think they're actually only looking a little bit better, not because of form or a new manager or anything like that, but more due to the fact that their points deduction was actually just halved. Not that they've necessarily picked up loads of points. I'm not going to sit here and say Coventry are going to go down. I can't do it. But we seriously need to pick up a little. We need to pick up a little bit if we're going to get out of the division. Seems to just be finding our feet. A little bit of a kind of run of games coming up for them this kind of next month or so. So hopefully pick up a few more points there. You've got to see Rotherham being sucked into it again. They always are.
Absolutely, yeah. Boing boing of the division, aren't they? So I think, obviously, Luke, I think you'll probably agree Wickham are going to struggle.
Yeah, I think the quality of the Wickham side, they haven't really been able to, especially during COVID, they haven't been able to build on that squad. I think they were a bit surprised to come up themselves last season.
Oh, we all were. Yeah,
but, you know, they can't really build from that with the financial situation. So I think they're just going to struggle without any fans.
I'm not even going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to go out here on a limb here. I can see Wickham doing all right. I just think there's something about the spirit that they've got as a unit. They've been building that for a long time now. They've got a manager that they love and trust a hell of a lot. They've got quite a few kind of cult players in there who are willing to throw it on the line. They obviously struggle with the adjustment early doors. But I really do think that they're going to put up a serious fight this year. They've brought in some quite wise signings. I know I completely agree with you. Their budget was next to nothing. Just like to add that Coventry's was the same. But, you know, it hasn't been easy to bring players in this season. And it's their first go at it. But they've brought in players who are internationals. Another one again, who played against England over the international break. Up front for those. But it's, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be as straightforward as saying Wickham are definitely going down. If anyone can get a point at Brentford this season, they'd be pretty pleased with it. I know they're not as good as they were last year, but they've done that at the weekend. I think they're going to fight a hell of a lot more than people assume they would.
Clean sheet against Brentford as well, with the amount of goals they've scored recently. That's got to fill them with confidence. I mean, they've got a few good attacking players coming off the bench. Gareth McCleary, who's obviously championship experience. Then young Fred Onyedinma, who's lively as anyone. Alex Samuel as well, who you know well, James. And then obviously we don't want to give too much to Akinfenwa because he's got enough everywhere else. That he's going to... Will he grab a goal this season? I don't know.
Grab a goal.
I'll leave it there. Yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch them. I think something that this question has made me think about, though, is the five subs rule, which they've obviously brought in this week. And it's the fact that teams like Wickham, teams like Coventry, teams like Rotherham, who don't have the biggest squads, who are obviously in the busier periods, which are going to be coming over Christmas, where every week's a busy period at the moment. But I think something that came out of that Coventry game on Friday night was that it's pretty apparent that Robbins isn't overly impressed by the five subs rule. I think it's hard to argue with it in terms of fitness of players and avoiding injuries, because we don't want to see a load of injuries. But equally, those teams that I just mentioned are not going to be as well equipped to bring five players on. Looking at that Coventry bench on Friday night, I'm not even sure there's five players you would have wanted to send on in that situation. And that's not disrespectful to those players, but there's players on there who are ridiculously young and have zero experience playing at man's level, let alone the championship. So I think that's going to come into it at some point, the fact that Forest have got a much bigger squad, and I don't see Forest struggling, especially now they've changed the manager. But yeah, the subs thing's really going to be big for those smaller squads.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to put our neck on the line and pick three teams that we think are going down, who was it, Martin? But I think we'll have to say that we're going to expect some surprises this year. James is saying Wickham are staying up. I don't think I'm going to go with him on that one. But I wouldn't be surprised if we did see one of Sheffield Wednesday, Derby, even teams like Birmingham and QPR slipping down the table when it comes later on.
I wouldn't drag Birmingham into that. And I know they're rebuilding their whole squad, but I think they've had a decent start to the season. I've taken that into account, and they've spent the money pretty well from Mr. Bellingham.
I'm going to just chuck in something there. The Birmingham fans would have something to say about that themselves. they are one of the most unhappy bunch at the moment. They're absolutely slating Eitel left, right and centre. They're not happy at all. They felt they should have absolutely battered Coventry on Friday night. And okay, they had a few good chances with Djukovic and he probably should have scored one of them on another day, he would have done. But they're not very exciting. They're a team that I could see getting dragged into it, I think, to be honest. I think what's really hard is the start that some of the teams that maybe at the start of the season you would have said would be down there have made. You've got Luton doing probably better than a lot of people would have thought. Barnsley certainly doing better than people would have thought, especially as they lost their manager so early on. So it's a really hard one. Like you say, I'm not going to go out there and say these three teams are going to go down, but I'll agree there probably will be a surprise package down there somewhere. Also, just for clarification, I'm not saying Wickham are definitely going to stay up. I'm just saying I think they'll put a bit more of a fight in than people would expect. It took them a while to even get a point on the board or score a goal, in fact. So there's
progress.
But
you have changed your tune a little bit there, because we might have to rewind that, but I think you did say they were going to stay up, James.
I don't know.
Does that answer your question, Martin? I hope so. If anyone wants to email in a question for next week, hopefully not something about promotion or relegation from the Championship, as I think you'll agree we've nailed those two. It is threesacrowdpod@outlook.com.
You've got to fucking die to get 3 points.
Well, at this point, I was going to start talking about and asking you for some goals of the week, but hearing Warnock there, I'm going to do an honourable mention for Marcus Tavernier's penalty. Yeah, bit of a mess, that one. Anyone else got any other honourable mentions before we go on to any of the actually really good strikes across the EFL this week?
Well, I mean, obviously Matt Smith has scored this week. It was going to be my nomination, but I've been banned from putting him as one of my top three. If it's just a header past the goalkeeper inside the box.
Must be a bundle at the back post, I'm afraid.
Yeah, so that can just be an honourable mention, but yeah, keep it up, Smudge.
I guess now's a good time to mention or honourable mention for Bennett and Hayden's goals.
Well, that's the question, which was better?
Neither.
Hayden takes the win then.
Thank you. Not for the first time.
But there were some seriously good strikes across the EFL this week, across all of the leagues. Some ridiculously good goals. One that I'm not going to put forward, but was a really good strike, was Styles for Barnsley. Absolute screamer into the top corner. And that was just one of many, to be honest. There was a hell of a lot. Anyone want to go first with their nomination? Luke, we'll come to you.
I'm just going to do my nomination and mention no other goals, because there are so many. I'm sure one of them will get mentioned, so I don't want to take it away from anyone. I'm going to go for Grant Leadbitter's absolute rocket. It's laid off to him, and he's just hit it so hard, and it's kind of touched the bar and the post at the same time as it's gone in. A little bit of a waste, because Okemabira just bundled home an equaliser quite late on to make it 1-1, but... And I've nailed the name.
Absolutely nailed the name. Where's that come from? Well, thank you.
Take one.
Oh, dear. Yeah. A little bit wasted, but absolute screamer nonetheless. I'd love to see it come down off the bar.
Yeah, it's a really, really good strike. But again, Sunderland haven't won, so I'm still smiling. But the... what I will say is, I think Sunderland are another club where the fans aren't very happy at the moment. Parkinson not necessarily playing the football that they want to see. Again, being fairly effective, but if not now, then when are they going to start taking enough points to actually get out of that league? They scored that screamer, but it was a matter of time. The amount of shots from the outside of the box they had in that first half, it was almost like they were doing a shoot on sight policy there, so I'm not quite sure what happened, but yeah, great strike from Leadbitter. Andy?
I think I mentioned it earlier, I know there were so many good goals this week, apologies if your team's goal hasn't been mentioned, but I'm going to go for Lewis Cook for Bournemouth. I just think the part of the game that it was in again, to all at the time, forced him on the edge of the box. It's just the way he's just put his foot through it, but it's one of those sort of Ronaldo type ones. Yes, I'll say that, where he just sort of stops his foot after he hits it and it just loops in the goal. Absolutely incredible strike.
No follow through. Like, I know what you mean. Like a bit like a knuckleball. It is a screamer.
Yeah, I think that's what the kids call it these days, isn't it?
Yeah. it was a really good hit, and the dip he's got on it. Fair play to him. It was worthy of kind of taking the game to them. My nomination is coming from the Oldham game. I don't know if either of you saw this one. Danny Rowe free kick. It's absolutely miles out. And another fantastic thing that the iFollows picked up. It's not the actual commentator, so it must be someone else sat in the stands. But as Rowe's running up to hit it, he screams something along the lines of, "He is going to do it." And it absolutely flies into the net. Honestly, if that net wasn't there, I'm not sure the ball would have landed yet. It's an absolute screamer. And that's my goal of the day.
Yeah, it was an incredible strike, wasn't it? I don't know much about that guy. He's 30 now, but I had a little look into him. He spent 6 years at AFC Fylde, where he scored goals for fun in the National League North and the National League as well. So he must have had offers at those points to move into the Football League, and he's finally taking it now at Oldham. But they look like they've got a real player on their hands at the moment. So if he can do that, I'm hoping we'll see many more.
Yeah, I do remember there being some conversation about him when Fylde had a bit of a cup run at the time. But like you say, it's a strange age for us to kind of only just be talking about him, maybe. I'm going to risk it. I'm sure that there was some chat about Ipswich being interested in bringing him in at the time. After, like you say, he scored a lot of goals in the non-league. I'm almost 100% sure, actually, that it was Ipswich that were going to bring him in. So I'm not sure how he only ended up going to... Not only, but, you know, when you've got offers from Ipswich and you end up kind of applying your trade at Oldham. I mean, it's still a great achievement at that age to have made this step up. But yeah, I don't know what happened. I think... I'm pretty sure he was Fylde's all-time leading goal scorer when he left, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, so he had six seasons there and he seemed to get 20-odd every single year, which if you did do that once in the National League, you're going to have League One, League Two teams knocking on the door. So forgive us if it's our ignorance and it's our fault for not hearing of him first. But hopefully he's going to bang a few in the Football League now.
Yeah, I don't think Harry Kewell will mind how they've got him. They've just... If he can score any more like that, I think Harry Kewell would just be over the moon.
Yeah, well, the audacity.
Manager of the week, Harry Kewell. He's needed that as well, so good luck to him.
Yeah, and I guess fair play to Oldham on being willing to take the gamble at the level.
Well, that leaves us to decide what is our goal of the week again, chaps.
Tough one this week. Three really good strikes. Something won't allow me to vote for Leadbitter, but we won't go into that.
I think Aaron Hayden, obviously, great strike. but I do like Danny Rowe. I think it's pretty hard to beat that one as well. The way obviously dead ball situation, superb strike.
Yeah, it's such a flat strike, even though there's a wall there. I think I'm sticking with Rowe. It's such a good hit.
I'm going to vote for it too.
Oh, sorry, Klaus, ladies and gents.
3-0 to the Danny Rowe. Throwback to last week.
I wish I'd kept track on who's we voted for, to be honest. I'd like to think I've had a couple of goals voted for. I've definitely had the Gus Hamer header from 25 yards. I've now had the Danny Rowe.
Last week you had Jordan Turnbull.
I think I had the dodgy Turnbull one.
It's been 3-0 every week, yeah. Nine votes. So.
And that's why it's three's a crowd, boys. All that leaves me to do is say goodbye. Have a great week and I'll see you next time.
Good night.
Anyone want to start with some news? Great.
That wasn't expected.
MK Dons have somehow got Andrew Sermon in.
Oh, fuck it. I accidentally clicked that.
To fix you.
Oh, fuck. Fucking hell, indeed. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, no.
How has he clicked that? How has he clicked that? Keep your hands off the fucking board.
Well, the first goal of the game comes from a Gimme Traore. Oh, Jesus Christ.
I thought you were going to try and carry on then.
That's blooper of the week.
Oh, Jesus Christ.